Millville, July 1905. On Saturday morning, July 15, 1905, not a single cloud is visible in the sky. It is the beginning of a glorious summer day. 10-year-old Philip Edwards sits in his usual spot on the front steps of the family home. The small wooden house is located in the Millville section of Naugatuck, Connecticut. In his left hand, Phil holds his fishing pole, and in his right hand he grasps his spyglass. The time is 8:30 a.m., and Phil awaits the arrival of his fishing buddies, John Simmons and Warren Birdsall. He peers down the dirt road in front of his house, which leads toward the center of town. John and Warren will be coming from that direction soon. The road is appropriately named Rubber Avenue, as the town of Naugatuck is well known for its production of rubber goods. As Phil waits anxiously for his friends, his father, Ben, steps out the front door and onto the porch. "A fine day for fishing, Phil," he says. "I'm off to the company for a few hours this morning. Next Saturday, I'll go along with you and your friends. If you use the boat today, remember to leave it where you found it after you're done." "I will, Dad," says Phil. In the distance, Phil sees his friends approaching with fishing poles in their hands. As 37-year-old Ben Edwards heads down the street toward them, two loud voices call out. "Good morning, Mr. E," says Warren. "Good morning, Dad," cries John. John Simmons considers Phil's folks his second family, which is why he calls Phil's father Dad. Ben Edwards responds, "Good morning, boys. I wish I could be going with you today, but I am off to work at the rubber company. Those bass in Long Meadow Pond just keep getting bigger every year. Promise you'll leave a few behind for me to catch next weekend." "We'll leave one or two for you, Dad," says John. "My father is working today, too," he adds. "So is mine," says Warren. Warren Birdsall Sr. and George Washington Simmons work with Phil's dad at one of the town's largest employers, the Goodyear Metallic Rubber Shoe Company. As Ben Edwards walks toward work, John and Warren greet Phil at the Edwards home. "Are you ready to catch some fish, Phil?" asks Warren. "I sure am," says Phil. "What took you guys so long?" "I had a few chores this morning," says John. "Let's get going." Long Meadow Pond is a 2.5-mile walk from the Edwards home. It is located in the neighboring town of Middlebury. The boys go fishing there nearly every weekend during the summer and fall. John and Warren are the same age as Phil. All three have been fishing companions for the last 2 years. Every Saturday, as they walk to the pond, something manages to distract them. Today is no exception. As the boys stride up Rubber Avenue, they approach a landmark that is the basis of a local legend. On the right-hand side of the road is a large rock that stands over 12 feet tall. Members of the community refer to it as the Star Stone and believe it is a meteor that fell to Earth shortly after the area was first settled in 1765. Phil peers at the stone through his spyglass. "Phil, you've seen that rock 100 times before," says John. "Do you have to stare at it through that spyglass every time we go fishing?" "There's just something about it that interests me," says Phil. "I really can't explain it. I'll bet it landed here when my great-great-grandfather Ben was alive. He was born in Boston in 1765. Just think, I'm looking at it through his spyglass." "How do you know that spyglass really belonged to him?" asks Warren. "I think it did," says Phil. "At least my grandpa says it was his. I think all of Grandpa's stories are true." "Like that story about Paul Revere?" asks Warren. "How you're related to him somehow? Maybe through his horse?" John laughs. "Very funny," says Phil. "Grandpa said my great-great-grandfather Ben's sister married one of Paul Revere's sons. But I guess you guys are right. I really have no proof of that either. Maybe someday I'll be able to prove it to you. Until then, all I have are Grandpa's stories and this spyglass." For a moment, Phil thinks about telling John and Warren about the recent glimpses he has seen through the spyglass, but he decides to wait until a bit later when they are all out in the boat. Further up on Rubber Avenue, the boys near the Elliott farm. 8-year-old Ethel Elliott stands in the yard and notices the boys approaching. "I thought I'd see the Fisher boys today," she says with a smile. "Come over here, John Simmons. I need to ask you a favor." John goes over to speak with Ethel. They talk for quite a while, and Phil and Warren start to get anxious. "Come on, John," says Warren. "We're going fishing today, not courting." "I'll be right there," shouts John. When John returns, Warren says, "She likes you, John. Every time we walk by that farmhouse, she makes up some excuse to speak with you. It's crazy. Why don't you just marry her? Then maybe we'd have a better chance of getting to the pond on time." "How about next Sunday?" asks John. "What about it?" says Warren. "The wedding could be next Sunday," he says. "What?" shouts Warren. Phil grabs Warren by the shirt, shakes him, and says, "He's joking." "I knew that," says Warren. "Anyway, we'll be fishing all next weekend, so there won't be time for any wedding. We'll just have to get up earlier so we can sneak by before Ethel spots us." "You've got to keep your mind off the girls, John," says Phil. "Remember, nothing is more important than fishing." John puts his arm around Phil and says, "One day, as hard as it is to believe, something will be more important to us than fishing. I'm not there yet, but when that day comes, I think I know what that something will be." Phil shakes his head, then changes the subject in an instant. "Race you to the pond," he shouts. In a flash, the boys are off. They race up South Street and then turn left onto Longmeadow Road. This road goes directly to the pond. At the usual spot, they cut through the woods and hike to the location where Phil's dad keeps his boat hidden. They turn the boat over and drag it toward the pond. Once the boat is in the water, they pick up the oars, get in, and begin to row to their favorite spot. "Ethel asked if we could do her a favor today," says John. "What kind of favor?" asks Phil. "The little 5-year-old girl who lives down the street from her loves pond lilies. Her name is Ella Wininger. Ethel said that Ella asked if she could find some for her at Longmeadow Pond and bring them back so she could keep them in a bucket of water in her room. Ethel knew that we had a boat, and she asked if we could cut some today and drop them off at the Wininger house. We finally get on the water, and you want us to spend our time picking flowers?" asks Warren. "They're not flowers, they're pond lilies," says John. "Lilies are flowers, and I'm not picking any flowers. I'm here to catch the biggest fish." "You mean the second biggest," says Phil. "I've got an idea," says John. "What if we make a bet? Whoever is the worst fisherman of the day, whoever catches the least amount of fish, has to pick the pond lilies and deliver them to Ethel's friend." Warren and Phil think for a moment. Each of them is confident that they will catch the biggest fish. But what about the most fish? "What time would the contest end?" asks Phil. "The time now is 10 a.m. Let's say we fish until 3 p.m. That would make the contest 5 hours long. Are you guys ready to start?" Warren nods his head in agreement, and Phil adds, "I'm ready, John. I've got nothing to worry about. I have a feeling that today's my lucky day." As the contest begins, Phil feels it's time to tell his friends about the visions he has seen through his spyglass. Phil thinks this is necessary because those visions include images of John and Warren. He's worried that his buddies will laugh at him, but he just can't keep the information to himself any longer. "Guys, there's something I need to talk to you about," says Phil. "What's on your mind, pal?" replies John. "It's about this spyglass I carry around all the time. My grandpa told me to keep this a secret, but I just can't do it any longer." "Keep what a secret?" asks Warren. "I know you're going to think this is crazy, but I see things through it that I can't explain. They seem to be clues about the future." John, with a puzzled look on his face, says, "I'm listening, Phil. What kind of things do you see?" "Last week, I saw the image of a large ship with a British flag on it. On board that ship were men dressed in uniform. All of them were older, maybe in their 20s. As I looked closer, I noticed that two of those men were you and Warren. Both of you were speaking to another man whose back was toward me. As I continued to watch, that man slowly turned around. I soon realized that it was me, and then the vision disappeared." "It sounds like you had a dream," says Warren. "This was no dream," replies Phil. "I was wide awake. It was the second vision I received a day later that bothered me the most. This time I saw another ship with some of the same men on it. As I looked closer, once again I spotted you and John on board. I searched and searched for the image of myself I had seen before, but could not find it. What do you make of it, John? What kind of uniforms were the men wearing? He asks. They look like soldiers, says Phil. I'm not sure what it means, Phil, but I wouldn't be bothered by it. Are you positive it wasn't a dream? As positive as I can be, says Phil. In case you're interested, guys, says Warren, here's a look at the first fish of the day. Warren brings a nice bass into the boat. This one's about a foot long, but the size doesn't matter. It makes the score Warren 1 and John and Phil 0. The fishing continues for several hours, and by 2:30 p.m., Warren has caught 8, John 7, and Phil 5. Get ready to pick some lilies, Phil, says Warren as his fishing pole bends and nearly breaks. This one makes 9. Soon another bass is flopping around in the boat. It is the largest fish of the day, 17 inches long. John soon catches his 8th fish, and now Phil is getting worried. 10 minutes left, says John. As the minutes tick away, Phil manages to land one more fish, but it puts his total at only 6. Time's up, says John. It is now exactly 3 p.m., and time to do that favor for Ethel. The lucky guy who gets to do it is you, Phil. That's just great, says Phil with a frown on his face. Well, row me over there and let's get this over with. A cluster of pond lilies is growing a short distance away, about 30 yards from shore. John and Warren row Phil close to them, and he pulls his fishing knife from his pocket. Cut them well below the surface, and they'll last longer, says John. When did you become the flower expert, says Phil with a smirk. Phil leans over the side of the boat and reaches into the water. How far down should I cut them, John? He asks. Just a little lower, replies John. Phil shifts closer to the side of the boat and reaches down further into the water. Suddenly, he loses his balance and lets out a scream. He tumbles headfirst into the pond, making a big splash. When he returns to the surface, a lily pad rests on top of his head. John and Warren are doubled over with laughter. You should be able to cut them low enough from there, says John. Thanks, replies Phil as he removes the lily pad from his head. After they're cut, I'll leave them with you guys and swim back. Phil cuts 4 pond lilies with his fishing knife, drops them into the boat, and swims to shore. John and Warren row to the spot on the shore where they had found the boat earlier in the day. With Phil's help, they drag the wooden boat into the woods and turn it upside down, placing the oars underneath. The boys begin to walk back toward Millville. John and Warren carry all the fish, and Phil holds the pond lilies that he will deliver shortly. Where am I taking these, John? He asks. To the Wininger house. We'll pass by it. It's just before the Starstone. What's the little girl's name? Ella. Ella Wininger. I hope she appreciates it, says Phil. The boys soon reach the Wininger house. A man stands in the front yard as they approach. It is Ella's father, John Wininger. Looks like a successful day of fishing, he says. All except for you, son. It looks like you caught more pond lilies than fish, and fell in the water, too. Well, sir, I lost a bet. Then I lost my balance, and it's a long story. I just want to deliver these pond lilies to a little girl who lives here named Ella. That would be my daughter, says John. Who can I say is delivering them? Philip Edwards, sir, but you can call me Phil. I'll do that, Phil, and I'll have Ella come right out. John calls for his daughter, who comes running down from her room on the second floor. When Ella sees the pond lilies, her big brown eyes grow wide. Are those for me? She asks with excitement. They sure are. Your friend Ethel asked us to get them for you. Phil introduces himself and his 2 friends. Ella gives Phil an unexpected hug and then says, "You're all wet. Did you swim out to get them?" "We have a boat," says Phil. "I'm just not very good at staying in it." Ella turns to her father and says, Pa, can I put these in a bucket of water and keep them in my room, please? Can I?
Sure, Ella, he says.
I'll help you do it.
Thanks, boys. It looks like you've made my daughter very happy. Goodbye now.
Ella runs toward the house and then turns toward the street to see the boys walking away.
Thank you, Phil, she yells out and then dashes inside.
Now, that wasn't so bad, was it? Says John.
I guess not, replies Phil.
I think she even liked you, says John. He holds his fishing pole out and pretends to look through it.
I can see it through my spyglass now. The two of you get married in about 12 years and have a whole bunch of kids.
John, that's not funny. First of all, she's only 5. And second of all, you don't have a spyglass like mine. Trust me, you wouldn't want one either.
Through my spyglass, Phil, that's what I see. Believe me.
Phil shakes his head. I've got to get out of these wet clothes before my mom catches me. She'll make me wash up on the spot.
The boys continue to walk down Rubber Avenue and soon return to the Edwards home.
Phil's mother, Minnie, is sitting in a chair on the front porch. As Phil gets closer, she notices that he is wet.
Did you boys go fishing or swimming? She asks.
By the looks of it, I'd say Phil did a little of both.
Hello, John. Hello, Warren. It's always good to see you, boys. Why don't you stay and join us for dinner?
That sounds great, Mrs. E, says Warren.
I'd love to, Mother, replies John. I eat over here more often than I eat at home.
My mom is starting to worry that I don't like her cooking.
Minnie Edwards smiles and sends Phil off to get washed up. As Phil cleans up in the next room, he yells out a question to his mother.
Mom, is a pond lily a flower?
Minnie gives the boys a strange look, and they all laugh. The next few years in Millville go according to plan. Phil, John, and Warren attend school together, and each week they count the days until the weekend. Every Saturday and most Sundays during the summer and fall, the Fisher Boys, as Ethel calls them, walk the same route to Long Meadow Pond. Ethel always finds a reason to speak with John, no matter how hard Warren tries to keep their fishing plans on schedule. Eventually, Ethel convinces John to take her out in the boat. In July of 1909, Ethel's 9-year-old friend, Ella Wininger, tags along, and Phil teaches her how to row. They joke about the first time they met, and Phil gathers a few pond lilies for her, while somehow managing to stay dry. Ella has a wonderful smile and a great personality. She knows just what to say to make Phil laugh. Phil continues to get visions through his spyglass, and he struggles to make sense of them. He also begins to wonder more about the stories his grandpa told him. Phil wants to know if these stories about his Boston ancestors are really true. In August of 1909, Phil takes a break from fishing and spends some time at his grandpa Ben's farm in East Haddam, Connecticut. During this time, 14-year-old Phil asks his grandpa a few questions, and he receives a surprising answer.